Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. He's Paul Dottino. I am John Schmelk. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We'll be with you live on Twitter for the first few minutes of the show. Then you can watch or listen to the rest of it on Giants.com or the Giants mobile app. And we're only a few days away from the Super Bowl. Paul Dottino is excited that it's the final NFL game of the year. He loves the offseason. He likes to take breaks. He likes to get away from everything. And he likes to not have any football. So Paul's very excited that we're getting our final taste of NFL football till about a real game, at least until next August. Hello.
John. You know, what's
funny?
I'd
like to poke you.
It's okay. You know what's funny about this game? I was just talking to the family about this in the last 24 hours. You know,
your family still talks to you?
Yeah.
Wow.
I have a lot
of respect for that.
After the season that we just had, I have no idea. I was so in tune to every step of the way what the Giants were doing this year. But I will tell you this. The Patriots have become rather mundane for me. I mean, they're in this game. It just seems like every year, even though they're really not.
Yep.
So I'm kind of bored about seeing them. And I understand that the Falcons have a tremendous offensive attack.
And they're an exciting team. It's a new team.
They've got some exciting players. They're a team that's only been to the Super Bowl once before. But I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not real in love with that team either. I have no rooting interest in this game whatsoever. None.
I'll root for the Falcons, and the reason I'll root for the Falcons, and you know I'm a big Matt Ryan guy, so I want him to try to get there, get a Super Bowl, because I think he's a good quarterback. I have no issue with Kyle Shanahan. I got no problem with their head coach. And nobody, frankly, and this is funny, no one on the Falcons annoys me. Usually when I get to these big games, I find the people I don't want to win, then I root against those people. No one on the Falcons, like, rubs me the wrong way. Like, people on the Seahawks rub you the wrong way.
Yes.
They're annoying.
No
one on the Falcons really rubs me the wrong way. You know what I mean? The Patriots with their past, they obviously do have some things that, you know, get on your nerves a little bit.
Yeah. You know, Matt Ryan seems like a good guy.
Yeah.
Julio Jones seems like a real good guy to root for.
Sure.
But to be honest, the Falcons are full of a lot of nondescript guys, to be perfectly honest with you, in terms of personalities. There's not a lot there to either like or dislike. The Patriots, we all know, they're the evil empire, they're Darth Vader.
Right.
It's easy to dislike the Patriots. I get that.
And it's easy to root against them, obviously.
It is, but it's also pointless to root against them because unless they're playing the Giants, they will win the Super Bowl.
And
it's just that simple.
And I think they're probably going to win this Super Bowl,
yes,
too, to be quite honest
so
with
do
you.
I.
But I figure today, folks, as we get ready for the Super Bowl, we can kind of take a look back at the Giants, obviously, with their four Super Bowl championships, and Paul can obviously go back and talk about the NFL championships from the 30s and 50s, so we can talk about that too, and just kind of take stock of the Giants history. But Paul, before we get going, I just want to get, before we move on to the history part of it, can you want to give me your prediction for the Super Bowl, because this is your last time you're going to be on before the game?
Yeah, you know, I actually like the Patriots to win by at least a touchdown. I know that the Vegas people are suggesting a field goal, but I would not at all be surprised if this is a 31-23 Patriots win, and I don't think it's going to be a nail biter either.
I'm going to go 27-20 Patriots. How about that?
That's not much far off of what I just said.
Actually, you know what? I'm going to take that back. I want to give the Falcons a little bit more credit, and I think the Patriots will score on the Falcons defense. Let me take that back. How about 31-23, but that's exactly what you said. But I think you're right. I think that's right in the proper range. I'll have my official prediction with Eagles tomorrow. But
okay,
I'm right with you.
I think, John, for me, I've said this throughout the postseason, every game in this postseason to me has been much more about matchups than it is about who the better team is. You've had so many people say, "Well, that's the better team." Yeah, but the matchup doesn't work for them. The Falcons may be a better team.
Maybe. I wouldn't say that, but okay.
Maybe. Some people think so. Some people think this offense is just so incredibly dynamic, and because Beasley's a great pass rusher, there are some people who've said to me they think the Falcons are a better team than the Patriots.
And I'm not sure if I consider Beasley a great pass rusher either, by the way, but okay.
I don't think so. Myself,
right.
I don't. But I've heard people say that. It's not out of the realm of,
I'll buy
of what's
it.
All right. Guess what? It's a bad matchup. It's a bad matchup for
because
Atlanta.
I don't know how the Falcons are going to slow down that Patriots offense. I just don't see it. I think the Patriots' offense will do okay. I don't think the Falcons' offense will get to 35, but I think they'll get in the mid-20s. I think they'll do okay. The matchup that I think to me is the biggest mismatch in this game is the Falcons' defense against the Patriots' offense.
I totally agree. Totally agree.
I can see everything else balancing out a little bit, but I can't get past that.
No. Tom Brady will do whatever he has to do and get enough done to win this game. There's not much question in my mind about it, to be perfectly honest with you. And part of the reason is, besides the Falcons' very young secondary, big part of this reason is because if you look at Tom Brady and this Patriots offense, when do they have the most problems? They have the most problems when there is a pass rush across the board and they don't know where guys are coming from.
Correct.
Well, the Falcons don't have one of those pass rushers. They've got one guy who had double-digit sacks. And guess what? The rest of their defense, they don't have enough of guys who can command the respect to confuse Brady and his attack that, oh, they're coming from here, they're coming from there, they're coming from up here, and they've got the secondary where they can gamble and send extra guys. They don't have that, John.
And you
they
can't,
don't.
And you can't show Tom Brady the same look over and over again because he'll eventually kill you.
No, right. You can't. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have enough of different weapons in your pass rush or enough of cover guys in your secondary
to bring guys from back there.
Right. So you don't have the weaponry to do it, and you don't have the experience in the secondary to even think about trying to outmaneuver Brady. I don't see how they win that matchup. I just don't.
201-939-4513. Thanks for watching on Twitter. You want to watch the rest of the show, go to Giants.com or the Giants mobile app. You can check it out there. And now we're going to get into the Giants Super Bowl history. And, Paul, I'm going to pepper you with questions here since you're a resident BBK okay. Giants historian. Best Giants Super Bowl championship team or championship team, not including Super Bowl winners.
Well, the best team was the 86 team.
Okay, I
agree.
Bar
none. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at that team that beat the Denver Broncos, and again, pre-salary cap era, which for me is automatically gonna do a whole lot for that squad. And quite honestly, the way that they dominated people and then what they did in the playoffs, that 86 team is the best Giants team that's ever been in my book. But, you know, I don't want to argue too much against the old guys from the 50s because I wasn't there, John. Contrary to popular belief, I was not in the stadium or the press box for the 56 championship game or the greatest game ever played, right, for that matter, what they lost to the Colts. But the 86 team was just, oh, my goodness. I don't even want to tell you what that 86 team would have done to their subsequent championship teams, but they would have beaten them all.
Best offensive player in Giants Super Bowl history. Not performance, best player. I've not done these with Paul before the show, so I'm kind of sprinkling him with these as we go.
No, this is fresh. It's going to be hard to go against Eli Manning.
I would go with Sims because I think his one performance was so dominant that I would go with him anyway.
You just qualified the question by saying not best performance by best player.
I agree. I think Sims was so good in his one title that it over... See, to me, the Giants' two Super Bowl championships in 2007 and 2011 were ultimate team efforts. You know, Eli didn't throw for 370 yards and four touchdowns
but he
in those
made
games.
The throws that had to be made.
Yeah, but he wouldn't have been in the position to make those throws if the defense didn't play so well.
I understand that.
So that's why I would go with Sims, and this is going to be one of our fact or fiction questions that our good friend Dan Salamone, who's now working the board on Thursdays, he's back, baby, came up with for our written fact or fiction tomorrow. And I went with Sims because, to me, not to take anything away from the Giants' defense in that game and everybody else, but Sims was the story. He was dominant. He was the star. I can make arguments that Eli wasn't even the MVP in one or two of those games. So that's why I'm going to go with Sims, even though it was only one game versus two for Eli.
Well,
how about Tuck?
Best. I'm going to go back to Phil for a second. Best performance ever in a Super Bowl, to me, is Phil Sims.
Well, that was an easy one. That's why I didn't give that one to you.
Right, right. But I'm going to go Eli because he did it in two games. He made the throws that he had to make in two games, which is why I'm going to go for best player. But okay. Defensive performance.
Defensive player.
Defensive player. Wow.
Fact, give me both.
Best defensive player would have to be – it's going to be a toss-up. I'm looking at Banks.
Is he that great game, obviously, against the Broncos?
Carl played well against the Bills, too.
And he did, absolutely.
It's going to be a toss-up between Tuck and Banks.
No, really, not LT?
No. LT's Super Bowls were not great. He just played well. Lawrence's best games ever, his most memorable games, were not either of the Super Bowls. So, no, it's going to have to be either Banks or Tuck. But best single performance, ooh, wow. Best single performance. I'm going to think about that one for a minute, John. That's a tough one. That's a really, really tough one.
Isn't it?
Really tough. You know what? Wow. I might just go with Tuck.
Which one?
Both were so important.
I know.
His plays were so critical to those games.
Absolutely.
I'm going to go Tuck in game two.
Okay, see, I would go Tuck game one.
That's all right.
But, yes, I think
no that, argument.
I think that's a fair answer.
No argument.
All right, we actually have a full bank of calls. So I want to get to you early and often at 201-939-4513. Give me your Giants Super Bowl questions, opinions, Giants Super Bowl history. You name it, we'll get there. Danny, we're going to start with Steve in D.C. on line two because he wants to talk about the Super Bowl. I want to lead off with that. Steve, what's going on, pal? How are you?
What's going on, man? What's going on?
Hi.
Hey, listen, I'll just call. First of all, I missed the original question. I just kind of got lucky and got right in. So
no, it's all good, Steve.
But I just, you know, I kind of disagree with you guys. Predictions, though. I mean, I just don't understand why I don't think that Atlanta's pass rush, even Vic Beasley, can get to Tom Brady. I think, you know, they're going to have a hard time with Atlanta's offense, number one, and their running game. And I think between Atlanta's running game and their pass rush, they're just an overall better team. I really think they're going to win.
Yeah, but Steve, here's the problem. The Falcons' pass rush was pretty middling this year. They finished, I think, 16th in the NFL in sacks. They were fine, but it's not like they were, you know, a top-five team in terms of getting pressure on the quarterback all year. And, in fact, if you look at their overall numbers, what were they, 28th in scoring defense or something like that? I mean, they had some really rough defensive performances even late in the year.
Rather pedestrian defense.
Late in the year, they actually kind of came on a little bit.
Well, but Steve, remember this. Even in their playoff game against the Packers, I know they didn't give up a lot of points.
Plays were there.
The Packers moved the ball up and down the field in that first half, and their drop passes, their fumbles or whatever is what kept the Packers off the board. To me, that wasn't great defense as much as it was poor execution by the Packers on the offensive side. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I just can't bring myself to root, cheer, or pick.
I get it. I totally understand that.
But I'm just not, and they may very well win. I just don't think it's going to be as easy as a victory as some people may it look like. I think it will be a competition.
Oh, sure,
I'm
will.
Hoping it will be anyhow.
I agree with you on that.
Let me just, and honestly, think about this for just 1 second, though, as you try to diagnose the game. Who is going to cover James White?
Or Deion Lewis?
I think White's more dangerous a receiver than Lewis is, but nonetheless, who's going to cover those guys? They don't have the ability to do that. They just don't. It's not in their defensive makeup to have a good matchup there. That's a very bad matchup, and Brady will find that matchup every time that he can take advantage of it. He will find it. And the problem, too, with the Patriots is that they basically spin a wheel on Sunday morning and decide, okay, this guy's going to be the star today. That's what they do.
See, now, I don't think they do it on Sunday morning, though. That's what I'll
describe. Saturday night?
I think they get into the game, they see what the other team is doing, and then they'll go to the player that naturally fits the defensive scheme.
I'm goofing with you.
No one does it better than Belichick.
That's right.
No one does it better than Belichick
and Brady. They can basically change up any time they want, and they can focus their attack on any guy that they want to use on that particular day. It's remarkable. at how, I mean, you know, I fantasy football friends of mine say all the time that Belichick is the most evil, rotten person on the face of the earth because he destroys fantasy football people because they never know on a given Sunday which one of their Patriots' offensive players they should play.
That's true.
And, you know, well, I wouldn't know because I hate fantasy football, but that's what he does.
Well, unlike us, I say that Atlanta will get it done because they have a better team. We know who has a better coach and
some people
a better
think
quarterback,
this, John.
But I believe Atlanta has the overall better team. And since it's a team sport, if I had to put my money, I would put it on Atlanta this week, which
okay.
I'm not going to touch that.
Thank you, Steve.
I just think, hey, listen, guys, I wanted to, you know, I had a Giants question.
Sure.
You know, Paul, I'm real big on your guy. What's his name? P. Ryan. I'd really like to jump up in the third round, somewhere in the third round,
yeah.
and get this guy. I don't even know where we pick number one in the third round. Number two, I just want to know where do you think you know you get a guy like P. Ryan? I'm thinking third round. That's really all I got for today.
That's where I'm looking also. To be honest with you, I would like to believe that he's going to be there, and I would like to believe that. You know, they would seriously consider him. I think right now, preliminary information that I'm looking at, he's the best fit, and I like him right there because I don't think anyone's going to take him earlier. He's not the kind of back that's going to draw a lot of headlines and a lot of attention in the first couple of rounds. People are going to want guys who are quicker, who are more elusive, who do more things out of the backfield.
I didn't catch the name you mentioned. Who does he want?
P. Ryan from Oklahoma.
Oh, okay, got it.
Love him. Absolutely love him. And I do think he could be had in the third round. I really do. I don't know in the fourth, but I do think in the third.
All right. Well, let's make it happen. We get our left tackle, and then we're all set. Anything, we can't go wrong from there. Hey, thanks for taking my call, guys. Enjoy the Super Bowl. I'll check back with you next week, hopefully.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it. 201-939-4513. Now let's get back to the calls. Adam in New York's been holding the longest. Adam, how are you?
Good. How's it going, guys?
Doing well. Adam, how are you?
Good. I wanted to talk to you guys about what would happen if JPP doesn't get re-signed.
What's your concern?
Looking at the
what's your concern?
Well, looking at the defensive end free agents, there's not – after JPP, there's really no guy that you look at that you say this guy's a good all-around defensive end. Like, you don't say – there's a lot of pass rushers, and then there's not a lot else – as far as defensive ends go, is of the caliber of JPP. But then you look at defensive tackles, and there's a lot of really good defensive tackles in free agency that maybe they want to allocate the resources to the middle of the line and then go into the draft thinking Taco Charlton in the first round.
Here's how I look at it, Adam. To me, if you lose one, either, or both of those guys, I don't think you replace them by dipping into free agency and giving money to somebody else. I think you replace one of those two guys, whoever leaves, by drafting somebody. And like you mentioned, one of the guys, Taco Charlton, there's a lot of good edge rushers in the draft, and it's a really good year to pick an edge rusher. You know, Jerry Reese loves to take pass rushers.
A lot of people do.
Obviously, in the first couple rounds of the draft. So what I would say, Adam, is that if you're going to lose one of these guys in free agency and they're going to get big money elsewhere, I don't think that's how you get their replacement. I think you get them through the draft. In my opinion, that's how I would go about it. I'm not saying you can't bring in a veteran, you know, maybe like they did Colin Jenkins a couple years ago, who could, you know, kind of be a stopgap and, you know, do a pretty good job, but not be like a top-end, upper echelon type of deal. But to me, I think if you're going to go DN tier, I think you look in the draft because there are some very good edge rushers coming out this year that I think can help right away, even if it's just in a part-time role.
Right, no, I mean more like going to free agency to see if there's another tackle because Hankins is young and he might improve a lot, but he hasn't shown. I don't think he's shown what they want or expect out of him yet. But Snacks has talked really high on him and it looks like he might improve a lot. But
who do you like in free agency?
Well, there's a lot of big names that would demand pretty similar money to JPP, but maybe a younger guy like Poe, even if they. Like a guy like Short would be great, but obviously he's going to command the same money as JPP. But there's still some young guys who are tackles in free agency that show more production than Hankins. If they don't, if they don't think he's worth another investment.
There really aren't a ton. I mean, I think, Adam, I'm going to disagree with you on that. I'm looking at the defensive tackle free agency class this year, and you mentioned Dontari Poe. He's really the one guy you're talking about. And frankly, to me, and I'd like to get Paul's opinion, he's more of a run stopper than he is a three technique that's going to go after the quarterback. He's a big run stopper. You already have Snacks Harrison to play that role. So to me, honestly, and when he was with Kansas City, obviously, Poe was a nose tackle. So, you know, to me, I don't see a three technique sitting here that's in their prime that gets me excited about plugging in there and getting after the quarterback, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I'm with you, John.
Well, there is Short, but he might cost too much, I guess.
Well, Quan Short's not unrestricted. I believe he's either restricted or Carolina has some type of right to him.
They can franchise him.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. They can franchise him. And given the fact they did not franchise Norman, and he is unrestricted, but they can franchise him, as you mentioned, and given the fact they did not franchise Norman last year, I think they'll take care of their big guys on the defensive line, even though his season this year, to me, wasn't as strong as his season a year ago.
Right, he's still like a top. Yeah, I know what you mean. But yeah. All right. Thank you, guys.
Hey, appreciate the call, Adam. Good stuff. Hey, look, the bottom line is that premium talent, Paul, on the defensive line is hard to come by.
Of course
it
is.
There's a reason those guys always go high in the draft, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's something you have to keep an eye on moving forward here.
You know, here's the one thing you must understand, that when you try to fill up the rest of your holes on the roster, whether it's free agency or draft, it's going to be determined by whatever the market is. Now, for free agency, if there are fewer players available at the position you need, well, then guess what? You have to pay a premium price cash-wise to get them. If there were fewer players at the positions you need in the draft, you know what that means, John. Now you got to start picking higher than maybe you want to pick them. The problem is, if the shelf is bare at the spots that you're looking for, it makes it much more harder, obviously, not just to get those guys, but you have to reach higher either in your wallet or in the picks to fill them. That's where, you know, I always ask every year, one of my favorite questions to ask in the pre-draft presser every year is, does the draft have enough fruit in the places that you're going to have to shop for? Some years it does. And you know what? Then it's kind of easy. Because now you can take your time and you can sift through it and you can figure out what it is that you want. But when the spots that you have, the holes, doesn't match the spots where there's a lot of free agents, where there's a lot of guys to be drafted, now it's like, uh-oh, not going to be able to solve this so easy. That's a problem.
201-939-4513. Let's stay in New York and go to Smash. He's up next. What's going on, Smash?
I'm all right. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. How are you?
All right, I guess. I had an incident a couple weeks back, you know, during the Green Bay game. I got a little upset. Here's a funny one for you. I punched the wall, and I actually shattered my hand a little bit.
Oh, boy. Smash. Come on, man. You got to find something soft to punch.
Well, it was just pure instinct, but
hey. You're watching too much Amare Stoudemire tape,
or actually Inez Kanter, the power forward for the Thunder. You saw he punched the chair and he fractured his forearm, and he's out 2 months.
Oh wow! All right, hey, listen, Steve took a little bit of my thunder there. I was listening yesterday, and P-Dot mentioned Samaje Perine, and man, that kid belongs in a blue uniform so bad, so, so bad. I would love, absolutely love to pick him up.
I did not catch the name.
Smash, can you say that again?
Samaje Perine?
Oh, you like him?
Yes, I do. I watched his highlight yesterday after I got off watching you guys, and man, I was in love. That kid is just his balance. He's not the fastest, but just the way he runs people over. I think him and Perkins together in our backfield will do so much,
all right,
so much damage.
Let me say this: first of all, he's an outstanding between the tackles guy. Second of all, he does have a second gear. If you've watched enough of highlights, what you'll see is he can get past the guys in the second level. Now, I don't know that he's going to have enough speed to necessarily outrun the third level of defenders in the NFL. He has a second gear, not necessarily a third gear. I would not call him a home run hitter. But he's certainly the kind of guy who can run between the tackles, take on people, go for that 5 or 6 yards, and then send out that little extra burst to get maybe a 15 to 20-yard run. He is certainly physical. His legs and thighs are thick.
Well, he's 5'10", 235, so he's got to be wide.
Yeah,
he's got tremendous effort and power in his legs. Look, I'm taking credit for being
– you can't discredit that. His vision is remarkable.
You know, look, I was wrong on Andre Williams. This is a guy who I feel strongly about. If you remember, that year, my two top guys for the Giants that year in the mid-rounds, Andre Williams and Devontae Freeman. Turned out I got the wrong guy. Freeman turned out to be better. I had both on my radar. Freeman was my second choice, and the Giants got my first choice, and it didn't work out so good. You heard it here first before anybody else in New York told you. P-Ron's the best guy for the Giants.
I agree 100%. All right. I haven't heard anybody mention this. This is my second point, and I'll take it off the air. But how to keep JPP and Jonathan Hankins? You've always said if there's not a guy out there better, equal or better than the player that we already have, there's no need to replace him, right?
Yeah.
JPP, me being Jerry Reese, God help him this season because he's going to need a lot, especially to fix that offensive line. But as far as JPP and Jonathan Hankins go, I would sign JPP to the same exact contract that he gave Olivier Vernon last year. I think they're both equal players. Yes, JPP has an injury history, which I know the cap room is going to go up. He might demand a little bit more money, but with the injury history, I'd give him the same amount of money I gave Olivier Vernon. I would franchise tag, as much as I would hate to give up that much money to Hankins, I would franchise tag him and see what he can bring to the table for us this year and see what else might be out there next year to see if we can replace him. Or if he does a stellar job, sign him to a long-term deal. I know we have OBJ and Pugh and a bunch of other players coming up, but that would be my stopgap as far as taking care of both of those guys.
Hey, look, Smash, I will say this. I think if the best and the way that makes the most sense to me to bring back both Hankins and JPP is Hankins on the short term, JPP on the long term. That is a lot of resources that you'll be putting on the defensive line for a season, an awful lot. And, look, I think your theory is right in that if you can't replace the guy with somebody better, why let him leave? But that's why the salary cap is what the salary cap is. Eventually, if you have too many good players, you have to pick and choose. It's happened to a lot of really good teams over the years, and eventually, if you do a good enough job procuring talent, it's going to happen to you as well. So I think I'll quote Jerry Reese, what he said after the year, that it is possible to keep both guys, but I think they're going to have to be creative and figure it out. And I think I think the type of contract you're talking about that you would give JPP, I think that's at the real top end of the spectrum there. And I think you'd be hard pressed to spend that much on two defensive ends, but maybe the Giants they've done a good job managing their cap. Maybe they'd be able to figure out a way to do it.
And like I said, I think with OV and JPP, they're both on the field together, they're a completely dominant force. That's like
I agree with that.
Give them just as equal money. Now, as far as with the Hankins situation, taking care of future money like DRC, I know he's got one or 2 years left on his contract.
Yeah, 2 years.
2 years? Yeah, so that would be a potential trade after next year, I think, if we get a corner, in the third, fourth round maybe, to help the defense out. DRC could train him up. I don't know how DRC hasn't really been healthy for the latter part of his career, but I think that would be some way to help free up some money in the future if we did decide to franchise tag Hankins and possibly give him a contract for the future. And that's it. I'll take it off the air.
Thanks, Mesh.
The interesting part for me, John, is that we know it's a young man's game and durability is incredibly important.
Sure.
And, look, I'm a big Jason Pierre-Paul fan as a person, as a player. I certainly would like to see him back here. But as you mentioned, and I think the caller did admit, he's got some wear on his tires.
And even before the hand incident, he was very banged up for a couple of years.
He's had a knee problem over the past years. He's had a
neck
problem. He's had a shoulder problem. He had back surgery a few years ago.
Yeah, and now he had the sports hernia this year.
So you're looking at a player who has been through a litany of things. And, you know, much like you have a car that you really, really love that you bought a few years ago, and my goodness, you don't want to leave the driveway with it. You just want to have that car all the time, and you want to hold on to it as long as you can. I'd like to see that too. But if you're talking about now paying top dollar, which is what you referred to when you said Olivier Vernon's contract, you have to take into account that the car is not new anymore. It's been through some wars. And that's just facts. And, you know, you have to put a price tag on that. And that's about all you can do. And then if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out.
I want to bring up one other thing before we get to our next caller, 201-939-4513. I think your point on that is right on. Because Travis and Queen wants to talk about the draft. So, Travis, before we get to you real quick, I'm not sure if you saw, Paul, but our friend of the program, Tony Pauline, who we had on for the Senior Bowl on Friday, he wrote for his website. Let me make sure I get the website right. So draftanalyst.com, there it is.
Yep.
He says, according to his sources, and again, this is an unsubstantiated report. This is just Tony giving his opinion and what his sources are telling him, that the Giants' favorite tight end of the draft, I'm not sure if they like him more than the Alabama kid, but maybe they think it's more realistic he'll be there when they pick, is Gerald Everett. I'm not sure how much you've seen from him, Paul. But he's 6'3", 227, and a lot of his compares have been to Jordan Reed. So much more of a receiver than a blocker, but a real potential weapon in the middle of the field.
Yeah, and I have heard the Jordan Reed comparison. And the only way that I go for a receiving-type tight end, because I do understand that there is a tremendous use for that kind of guy, the only way I move off of my old school thinking on this is if you truly believe that Will Johnson is going to be healthy, he's going to be a big part of this 2017 offense as the blocking tight end, the inline tight end, the guy who's going to be able to play some fullback when necessary, and if you're willing to go some two tight end sets where Johnson and then that receiving tight end is part of the deal.
Play a lot of 12 personnel.
Then I'm okay with that.
Okay.
I'll go for the receiving tight end.
Even as a first-round pick.
I'm not allergic to it, provided Will Johnson's going to get his snaps.
People say evolution doesn't exist, I hope you just listen to Paul DeTino's statement.
There you go.
That's evolution at work.
There you go.
He's advanced from Fred Flintstone. He hasn't gone quite to the Jetsons yet, but he's somewhere in the middle.
Yes.
201-939-4513. Now we'll go up to Travis in Queens. Travis, what's going on? How are you?
All right. How you guys doing, John?
Hi,
Travis.
Good. A few questions about a lot of things concerning the Giants. One, if you guys talking about the kid, P.J. Ryan, I think his name is, in the third round, and then, right, you guys is also stating that the first and second round is very important, where Jerry Reese, he can't miss. Because to get a running back in the third round, then you're saying that this kid is better than a Darkwood. And Darkwood, he shows flashes, but I believe in his defense, he never really had the chances like a full person.
Well, he's a different back.
Well, Travis, I'll say this straight up. I have not looked at the Oklahoma kid much at all yet. I haven't started my work yet on it, so I'm just going based on what Paul's saying. But, yeah, he's a very different back for one. And it's all right. If you want to use a middle-round pick, and I've said this since the end of the season, to compliment Paul Perkins and split time with him, that's cool. That's why I'm not a huge fan of drafting a running back in the first or second round this year, because to me, if you do that, that guy's got to be your full-time back. If I'm using a first-round pick on a running back, guess what? He better be Ezekiel Elliott.
Right.
He better be Todd Gurley and run it 25 times a game. So I'm not interested in drafting a running back that early unless I'm taking Paul Perkins out of the mix, and I don't want to do that because I thought he showed you enough the last couple games of the year to at least have him as part of a rotation.
My plan is we're going two-headed backfield. I think if you're going to go with a two-headed backfield, if you're going to go Perkins and then a compliment, Thunder and Lightning, Barber, Dane, Bradshaw, Jacobs, Perkins, Mr. X, P. Ryan is Mr. X, and you don't draft that Mr. X in the first or second round if he's going to be part of a two-headed backfield. You think about third round. Think of Natrone Means, okay? That's who he is.
I think you're dating yourself too much on that.
Well,
I'm a name.
I know he is. Okay. So Travis knows that.
I follow you guys.
All right. Think about that. Think about pairing a Natrone Means with Paul Perkins. Tell me that wouldn't excite you.
Oh, I'm a 90s baby. I don't know who that is.
All right. I'm sorry.
I'm
too old. No, I'm just too old. I'm too old.
You know,
I'm just too old.
I'm saying, because, you know,
it's okay, Paul.
I'm like, this kid is good. I don't mind taking him anything to help the offense. But I'm saying, so if we go running back third round, and then you know, that first and second round, if it's a tackle or a wide receiver, you know, they have to be day one starters for us. You know, then on top of that, I think with the O-line, like the angle that we see when we watch the game, we see the O-line. So we don't really see the receivers.
Right.
And I think if it was the other way around, you know, like we would have a different perception of, you know, the wide receivers versus the O-line. Because when you look at our O-line versus our wide receivers, you go Odell Beckham, Shepherd. O-line, you go Justin Pugh and
Richburg.
Yeah, right, exactly, Richburg. And versus, like, them two versus each other, you know, when Shepherd is in the slot, I mean, he's only open to the middle. Whereas if we're in a three-man set, you know, that other outside wide receiver, our number two wide receiver, has to be close to our number one wide receiver. Whereas I think here's what the Giants should do. I would go Martellus Bennett in free agency if he goes back to the market, and I invest in Jarrell Adams because he looks promising, and maybe sign a tackle from I believe the Bengals, Whitworth. Sign him and you move Flowers over.
Dude, Whitworth's 35 years old. Just remember that.
Yeah. Okay. So somebody young. I don't know if somebody.
Riley Reiff to me would be the best target for them if they're going to go offensive.
He's 28. He's played right and left. He could provide competition. Okay. He's got flexibility. I think that's the guy that would be in the wheelhouse.
I've been pushing that now for weeks, but
okay, good.
You know.
Go him. Got it. Oh, okay. So we go him, and then we move Flowers to right, and then I think we focus to the draft when we go wide receiver or tackle, you know, just if the right tackle doesn't.
I would not use another top two pick on a wide receiver. I don't think it makes sense to run out three wide receivers and have all three of them be first or second round picks. I don't, Travis, and thanks a lot for the call. I don't agree with that strategy. I think you have enough weapons at wide receiver as you stand right now. I think it's much more important to get a receiving tight end, in my opinion.
Yeah. I would be.
Need three stars at wide receiver.
I would agree with John on that one. Now, you know, I've been talking about Andre Holmes from the Raiders as a really good fit among the unrestricted free agents.
He is a bigger guy. Very inconsistent, though.
Plays specials really well.
Mm-hmm.
Had no drops last year.
How about Kenny Britt?
That's good enough.
Is that who you're looking at over there?
No.
Because he's also a free agent, and he also is very tall.
We had a guy yesterday tell us Brian Quick.
Oh, okay.
And he, you know what? He's probably not a bad guy to consider.
And here's the thing with these Rams wide receivers. I don't think you know how good or bad they are based on the quarterback situation there. Maybe they could be better if they were with a better quarterback. But at the same time, they also had a million drops this year too. So I don't want to take them off the hook too much.
No. But you see, I'm with John in that I don't think for a guy who's going to be part of your three wide receiver set, if you believe that Beckham and Shepherd are your top two guys and you want to add a third guy, whether or not Cruz comes back, or I mean, that's a totally different question. But I don't think you need to spend a premium pick or premium money for a Britt, a Pryor.
I agree.
Alshon Jeffrey.
No, you don't
want to do that.
No.
You want that guy to be a value guy. If he's a value guy, that means it's going to be along the lines of the guys we're talking about in free agency, or at the highest, a fourth-round pick, maybe. Maybe?
If the right guy's there in three, I'd consider it. But, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't make it a first or second round there.
I can't.
No, I agree. 201-939-4513. Nugs had to go fast, and we lost his cell phone a couple days ago at the end of the show, so we welcome him back now. Nugs, what's going on?
We had him on yesterday, Nugs. How you doing?
I squeezed the whole call in yesterday.
Oh, that's good.
We got you on. It's all good.
Now, Paul, I want to continue yesterday, because you know yesterday I called in and I said, let's go for Terrell Pryor, and I think he'll be cheap. Now, when I say cheap, I don't mean like seventh round draft pick cheap. I think comparative to what a good, he's going to get paid like a number two receiver.
Do you want to pay number two market value for a guy who at best is going to be your number three? Do you want to do that?
Okay, this is the way I think Terrell Pryor can be a legit number two receiver. And this is what I'm saying. You're looking at Andre Holmes, right? Let's just think about what the market is going to be for wide receivers out here. I'm looking at the free agency page right here. And I'm looking at Andre Holmes. He had 14 catches for 126 yards and 3 touchdowns.
Now, I want to throw something out to you for a second here, and this is real quick, and this is just off a website, SpotRack, which does a very good job compiling NFL salaries, and based on his production, they think the market value for Terrell Pryor this offseason will be a 4-year, $36 million contract. Would you pay him that?
I will do that. I will do that in a heartbeat, and this is why I say that.
I wouldn't.
When OBJ's contract comes up, he's going to want Julio Jones money.
No, you know what? I don't think he is. I think he's going to want money that we've never seen a wide receiver get before. I think whatever he gets, then we're going to start calling everything else Odell Beckham Jr. money. And frankly, he deserves it. He's that good.
Okay, exactly. But I got to think about my team, and I got to think about my salary cap. Do we want to be the team who paid the highest salary of all time for a wide receiver, who, in my opinion, is the third or arguably the fourth best wide receiver in the league? I don't think OBJ is better than Julio Jones. I don't think OBJ is better than Antonio Brown.
Well, for one, but Nugs, in 2 years, he might be better than Julio Jones, but Julio Jones will be 30 by then, and Beckham will be just 25. And you know that's not how it works, though. You know, whoever comes up next is always going to get the most money. It happens at the quarterback position. It happens at all the positions. It's just the way it works. As the salary cap goes up, salaries go up with it. So, look, Odell Beckham Jr. is a tremendous player. I know the Giants are going to want him here long term. He's that good. Yeah. And I think you got to do what it takes. You don't want to be the team to let him walk. I mean, you said, do you want to be the team that pays them that much money? I'd rather be that team than be the team that lets them walk away. You know what I mean?
Let me just say this to you, Nugs. There are 15 players who made an average salary of $10 million or more in the NFL. There are 15 of them.
Is that it?
According to the market value numbers that John was able to call up for you based on the estimate, that's about 8.5 a year, right?
Yeah, give or take.
Okay,
nine.
That would put him actually 16, 17. It would put him 18th ahead of guys like Garcon, Antonio Brown, DeSean Jackson.
And these are just wide receivers you're talking about,
right?
Here.
Just receivers. Right. To me, that's a reach. Not to mention, I don't think in the giant structure of things, you want to put those kinds of resources into that position in that spot. I just don't see it.
All right, but look at it like this. Okay. 4 years, $36 million. I was thinking to myself, 4 years, $40 million in my own head last night when I was looking through all these people, right? And I'm thinking, okay, well, Kenny Britt's gonna come off, is gonna be a free agent, and he had 68 catches. 1,000 yards, just like Terrell Pryor, and 5 touchdowns. So he had 5 less yards, 1 more touchdown, average more per catch, and he's the same age as Terrell Pryor. I don't think the market this year is going to be breaking the bank for any of these guys. I think Alshon Jeffrey is going to set the market, even though he was hot, even though he was hurt. And I'm saying this, even if Terrell Pryor wants, okay, let's say the 4 years, $36 million. We do $18 million there guaranteed. That makes his base salary for the year what, $4.5 million over the next 4 years? And I don't know, you know, I'm just throwing it out there. But just
who cares what his base salary is? That signing bonus gets prorated over with the cap over each one of those years. So you're still going to have a $9 million a year cap hit with him. And number two, what happens when Beckham becomes a free agent in 2 years? That means you're going to have $34 million invested in your wide receiver position?
You see,
that's really hard.
I think what you really want to do this year, and I'm taking a step back for a second, and I'm trying to look at the big picture from a business angle. I think what you want here is you want to get a guy who is going to be undervalued financially. In other words, a guy who has maybe not reached his full potential yet, but maybe is coming off a subpar year to where you can actually get him at a bargain rate. I don't think you want to pay market value for that guy who's going to play that spot. You want a bargain.
You know who a guy is that I see that I like that I think could fit that mold?
Let's hear.
Robert Woods from the Bills. He's 24 years old.
Yeah.
He's been a solid wide receiver for Buffalo. You can probably get him for a few million dollars a year, and I think he would be a very solid, you know, he might be an outside receiver, but he would – what's that?
The problem is with Woods, he's only a six-footer. And you want – in my mind, the Giants, if they're going to add a receiver, has got to be a skyscraper.
I'll buy that.
I want a big guy.
I was talking more age production-wise.
But in terms of price – and production in terms of the value quotient, John's on the right track. I just don't want a six-footer.
And that's fine. I'll buy that. That's okay.
I need a 6'3", 6'4 guy. Quick fits.
There aren't many of those, by the way.
Quick fits it, and Holmes fits it. Those two guys fit that description perfectly because their stat numbers are not going to command premium dollars. But, look, Holmes had a 47-catch season 1 year with the Raiders a few years ago.
Yeah.
And he's still, what, 28 years old?
Just dream with me for a second. Just dream with me for a second, okay? These guys, they're calling themselves apex predators, right? I want to buy into that. I want to buy into that, the apex predators. Now, I'm looking at it like this.
Who?
Receivers. If you.
I didn't know that was a thing.
You know,
yeah, that's their nickname. I don't know.
Yeah, that's what the
yeah I know that's what they call themselves. But you know what?
I didn't know that.
Win a Super Bowl title, then call yourselves a nickname. Don't do it until you get a ring.
And that's what I'm saying. I'm thinking about it. Like we got Eli. We've actually got a bargain on Odell Beckham for the next 2 years, and the possibility to franchise tag him. Man, if we can roll out Terrell Pryor on one side, Shepard in the slot, OBJ on the other side, and they're always going to be rolling their coverages to OBJ.
Well,
we have
all right,
Nugs. If you don't put more money in the offensive line in the running game,
thanks for the call, Nugs. We gotta go.
On the outside,
Nugs. We gotta go, man. Thanks for the call, pal. We gotta go. Sorry. No, you can't.
Invest more in the O-line and the running game.
If we've learned,
and the receivers will take care of themselves.
If we've learned anything over the last 3 years, what's been the reason behind the Giants winning and losing? When the Giants became a great defense this year, why did they become a great defense? Because they improved up front.
It's always about the trenches.
Now, obviously, adding Janoris Jenkins was a big
sometimes
deal.
Sometimes old school rubs off. Sometimes it does. Trenches, baby. Cha-ching.
Obviously, Janoris Jenkins helped. Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie coming back and playing well certainly helped. No one would argue any of that. But why did the Giants do well defensively this year? Olivier Vernon, JPP back, Snacks Harrison. Why'd they struggle on offense? They had trouble winning the line of scrimmage battle. Don't try to put all your resources into the perimeter. You need perimeter guys, but you know what? You got them. You have Beckham. You have Shepard. It's a first-round pick. It's a second-round pick. You got them. They're there. You already have them. Worry about winning the trenches. Please. Every year we get into the same thing. Everyone wants to make these splash picks, whether it's receivers or running backs in the first round or Get Alshon Jeffrey.
This is this is what all you folks do. Okay, you sit there and you cry when I beg for the trenches every January, February, March, and April. And what happens? I catch grief for 4 months. Then once the season starts, then everybody calls up and says, oh, we're not winning enough games. Our offensive line's not doing this. We're not running the ball. We're not getting enough of this, and we're not getting enough of that. And everybody cries for about 3 months during the second half of the season, and maybe December, and says, or maybe January, and says, oh, we need to do better. Flowers isn't playing good enough. Bobby Hart's not playing good enough. We don't like John Jerry. We don't like Marshall Newhouse. And then, conveniently, February 1st, everybody forgets. And they all want the big, flashy skill position players. And Dottino's too old school. And Dottino doesn't want any of those guys. He just wants to win the trenches because he's boring and he's too old. I'm so happy to hear you say what you said, John, because it shows it's rubbed off. Folks, understand, you got to win the trenches or you don't win the ring. Case closed. I starve for a power running game. A connoisseur of the game as I am. That's disgusting that you actually record this stuff.
Oh, I have it all.
That's Fred Flintstone football. That is disgusting.
I have it already.
I can see you reaching over there, but I didn't know what it was you were going to do with that. But that's
we
really,
told you what to do.
That is so disgusting.
It's all there.
See, that's what new age millennials do.
And this is just you. I have Lance stuff in there,
okay,
too.
Okay, I'm glad you got other stuff in there, too.
I am equal opportunity. Don't worry about that.
Anyway, I'm just glad to hear you preach the trenches. It shows it's rubbed off. God bless.
Well, what did we get calls about all season long?
But they forget. They forget. Once we get to February, we start talking draft. They all forget. They forget.
What do they do?
I want the wide receiver. I want the tight end who's going to catch 18 touchdown passes. I want the running back who's going to run outside for 2,000 yards.
Now, look, I will agree. I do think they do need a tight end that could do a little damage in the passing game.
Yes,
But you have to fix the other issue first
We discussed that.
You have to fix the other issue first for it to matter.
Go get a receiving tight end as long as he doesn't take snaps away from Will Johnson this year. I'm okay with that. I told you, I'm willing to change with the times a little bit.
To me, Apex Predators is a better nickname for a defense. Don't Predators, like, attack people and, like, eat people up? To me, that's more of a defense thing than an offense thing, no? That's just me.
It's more of when you are the best and you're not the best.
No, I'm not talking about whether or not they should get the nickname. I just mean, it seems like more of like a, couldn't you see linebackers being the Apex Predators?
Oh, I understand.
You know what I mean?
You want Predators are more of a defensive mentality.
Yeah, you're attacking.
I get it.
Yeah, to me, it's more of a defense thing. Well, that's just me.
Whatever.
Anyway. All right, we got four more calls, and we only got 5 minutes. So we're probably going to go a little bit late. Paul had to have his five-minute rant, which I will now, since I have on tape, go back, record, and put on the replay.
You did not.
Have this whole thing on tape, absolutely. Oh. Let's go to Rob in Atlanta. He's up next. Rob, how are you, buddy?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Man.
Hello.
All right, how you doing? I just wanted to talk about JPP. I think he's gonna be a Giant next season because he kind of like last year in free agency he kind of reached out to Olivier Vernon and kind of talked to him, kind of help the situation to bring him over here to the Giants.
Interesting,
so
you
really
say that.
To play with Olivier Vernon.
Yeah, interesting you say that because is it not true, John, that both Hankins and Vernon, I think, if I'm not mistaken, have tweeted out that they want JPP to stay, and they clearly would like to have him here.
I think Snacks put something up the other day that he wanted both of them back. Actually.
Snacks, too?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that'd be,
Look, all those guys love each other, so they're obviously going to want the guys back. But, look, players also aren't in charge of financials. And really
– no, they're not.
If it wasn't – if finances had nothing to do with it, both those guys would be back anyway.
Yes.
If the Giants didn't have to worry about money and the salary cap, those guys would be on the team. But unfortunately, that's something that they're going to have to figure out.
Yep.
But I think he's going to, the contract situation, I think he's going to, he's going to work something out where he can, he's going
to
stay on
the
team.
Be nice to see.
Yeah, Rob,
be nice to see.
Here's the thing, though, Rob, and look, this is the one time JBP in his career is going to be in and around this prime and have a chance to be an unrestricted free agent. If he goes out there and gets all the money he can, I can't blame him.
I will say one thing, though, before we leave this topic. If he talks to Michael Strahan, Justin Tuck, and Osiya Manura, he will find one common thread that all three of those guys who were teammates and have achieved tremendous success and also have his respect, they will all tell you they were better off when they were with the Giants. Michael's glad he never played anywhere else. OC isn't necessarily thrilled he didn't finish his career here.
Despite his complaining every year, by the way.
Yes. And Justin Tuck will also tell you he wished that he had played his whole career with
but
the Giants as well.
Financial decisions.
It happens, but given their druthers, they all would have preferred to be lifetime Giants. I wonder if those conversations will take place and how much weight they will carry with Jason.
Yeah, who knows?
And one other thing, too, about the Green Bay game. I know it's been about 3 weeks, but I still, as a fan, feel the heartache, man. So one other thing about, like, OBJ, you know, he always talked that, you know, he'll do anything, like, you know, for the team. You know, he'll compete. You know, he's a guy that, you know, kind of will pretty much do anything, really. So I think on the situation with the, you know, the Miami trip, and I don't really want to go back and talk too much about it, but the situation with the Miami trip, I think that, you know, because I think Lance, I mentioned earlier during the week, too, that that the trip that, you know, if they would have went to visit with their family or something, you know, if never would have been blowing up like that. But because, you know, they went to Miami, that kind of blew everything up. And one other thing, too, like with Victor Cruz, I was kind of disappointed that he actually went on the trip, being that he's a veteran guy and he's a guy that's like you know, I could say, you know, our leader for, you know, our receiving corps. He's that leader they kind of look up to. And I was actually shocked and surprised that he actually went on the trip.
Thanks for the call, buddy.
All right, thanks, man. Thanks for taking my call.
We got to roll. I think you guys have all heard our opinion on the boat stuff enough, so I'm not going to go on that again. You know
that ship has sailed.
I'm
sorry.
That was one of the most clever things I've ever heard you say. That was pretty good.
Thank you.
By the way, back to the Apex Predator thing. You know who the ultimate Apex Predator is? Especially if you saw the most recent movie, and that was kind of the theme of it. Godzilla.
I did see Godzilla.
Oh, did you see the new Godzilla? It was pretty good, right?
I would like to have seen more of him.
Okay, that's fair. But, you know, this was the introductory Godzilla movie, though. So I think you kind of expected they were going to try to build up to him making his big reveal at the end.
The new King Kong is coming out.
Oh, can I get enough of these? I mean, this is like the third King Kong now. I got enough King Kong in the Jack Black movie.
But you know what? The special effects are getting better, so.
No, that's true. That's true.
You know, remember the old one? It was actually a little doll.
I do. Yes, correct.
And he moved like in stop motion. He was like really gawky.
All right, well, we got to take these calls because Dominic's here now. He's going to want to eat lunch, and he's going to get annoyed if we don't wrap up quickly enough. Let's go to Bill in Phoenix. What's up, Bill? How are you?
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Hello. Doing well, Bill. Long time no speak. How are you?
Good. Hey, I got a sort of a draft scenario and a cap scenario where it might help us. I'm sure you guys are not going to like this, but just say we sign JPP and Hankins.
Okay.
We got them signed. So we got our defensive line set.
Okay.
We come up to the draft. We're short on offensive tackles. We need offensive tackles, but they're not there.
Okay.
The best tight end is not there.
Okay.
Wouldn't that be a perfect time to take a risk on maybe a first-round quarterback that's falling, somebody like Watson from Clemson that has a lot of potential?
Bill, at that point, what I would do, honestly, I would pick the best player available. If you don't see a guy there at a position of need that you really would think would help the team right away, I think you go out there, and if the best player right there is a corner, I think you consider that. If the best player is a pass rusher, I think you look at that. If it's a linebacker, I think you look at that. And I think you pick
the
guy that's best.
What about if it's the quarterback? Do you look at that?
If it's the absolute best player on my board by a large, large margin, I would consider that. But you would really have to like the guy. I mean, you would have to be convinced that this guy is a future franchise quarterback and nearly a can't-miss guy.
Yeah, I really like Watson from what I saw.
And I would still be worried about it.
You know, in the Alabama game, and that would really help offset our cap in the future if we could hit on a guy like that.
See, but Bill, here's the problem, and it's just the nature of the beast with the quarterback position, and I think Paul would back me up on this. How often, Paul, do you get to the end of the first round and the highest rated player on your board's a quarterback?
It just doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't, because teams will reach, because they're so desperate for a quarterback, they'll pick above his slot value to get him. So very rarely in the first and second round do you get to a point where the best player on the board happens to be a quarterback. It just doesn't happen very often.
No.
Okay, just looking for your opinion.
No, it's all good, Bill. I appreciate the call. Good idea.
Okay.
Thank you, bud. Let's go to Tim in Orlando. He's up next. Tim?
Hey, guys. I'm struggling with my connection. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you loud and clear, Tim. Go ahead.
You can. All right. I'm struggling to hear you, but that's okay. I'm hearing a lot of guys on the show lately, last couple of days, talking about Miami. Oh, why are we talking about Miami still?
So move on from it. Paul, go on. Don't talk about it. Go to the next thing. I beg you, please. Go, Paul, go, go.
Paul, remember when Miami used to just be a place where the Dolphins played football? Oh, my goodness. I do not want to talk about Miami.
So then don't bring it up. Next topic. Topic two.
Sorry for bringing it up.
That's okay.
All right, so
go ahead.
I can't hear you. Sorry, my bad. The problem with that trip is not that they win. I don't care. They can party with Justin Bieber. They can party with Trey Songz. They can party with the Queen of England. I don't care. Do not post it on Instagram or social media. That's what was stupid. All right, moving on. Eli is set to make a ton of money next year, and I've heard people talking about maybe restructure. Paul, in your experience, how often does that happen with a aging quarterback, and is that even a little bit likely?
Well, in my experience, I won't say it's necessarily happened with quarterbacks because, as you know, Eli's been here a long time, and they've never had to do anything with him, really, in terms of numbers. But there have been guys over the course of the years during the salary cap era who redo deals 2, 3, 4 many times over. I'll give you a great example. Amani Toomer, the greatest Giants receiver in team history. He's put up all the numbers, has all the records. He, many times over his career, restructured his deal to free up salary cap money in a specific season. Jesse Armstead did it several times. I mean, it's not something that's unusual. It does happen. So, I mean, are you asking me, could it happen? Certainly it could happen. But, you know, that's got to be agreed to by everybody. It's not something you just say, oh, you're going to do that. You got to have everybody on the same page. So if you're asking me, it's possible.
Thank you, Tim. Appreciate the call, bud.
Is it possible? Sure, it's possible.
All right, final call. Diana in Pennsylvania. She wants to go back at Nugs. What's up, Diana? How are you?
Hey. How is everybody? I'm a first-time caller. Just want to let you know.
Thank you. Well, thank you for being.
I am a diehard for 35 years. And, Paul, I want to let you know that Natron Means is somebody I am super familiar with. So you didn't date back too far. And I believe the trenches is the way to go. People want to talk about Eli. People want to, talk about him aging. But I don't think we've really got to see the best of Eli because we've really never had since the days of Deal and Snead, have we really had an offensive line that has gelled together. You know, another position I think we really need to concentrate on, which we generally don't, is tight end. We have got to start grooming somebody. You have to go back to the days of Boss, Shockey, and them to really see a quality tight end on our team. You know, I always used to go crazy about Ernie Accorsi, always, every year, defensive end, defensive end, defensive end, and now I see why. And I think we have to put some of that into our offense and our offensive line. If we had a running game, Eli would be more successful. But because we don't have an offensive line that really breaks a lot of holes, it makes it really difficult for any running back to be successful. Perkins, yes, at the end of the year, I'm glad we got to see a little bit out of him, but I think if we don't strengthen our offensive line to match that of what we did with our defensive line last year, we're in for the same struggle.
Bravo.
Very appropriate. I would remind you of this. Yes, Shockey was a first-round pick. But if you go back over the last three or four decades of Giants football, Bavaro was a fourth-round pick. Zeke Mowat was an undrafted free agent. Boss was a fifth-round pick. These are some of the better tight ends the Giants have had over the
years.
Now,
remember this, though, too. The tight end today plays a much bigger and different role in the NFL in terms of a weapon as a receiver.
Mark Bavaro caught over 1,000 yards worth of passes for Phil Sims. He was his top receiver during that era.
But you don't you agree that you have more athletic tight ends now than
you,
did back then?
But in terms
weapons?
Of...
I mean, no one was... There was never anyone back then catching 110 balls at tight end.
They're more spectacular, but in terms of key roles in the offense, Bavaro and Joe Morris were the two go-to guys in that offense. Bavaro was the number one receiving threat. Joe was the running back
threat. What was Bavaro's biggest reception year?
He had over 60 catches for over 1,000 yards.
60? Whoop-de-doo. There's like five tight ends that get 80, 90 catches
but
a year.
But in that offense, he was the primary receiving weapon.
That's fine. I understand that. But in overall, in the bigger scheme of the NFL and the way offenses work now, tight ends play a much bigger role, especially in terms of being big play receivers.
I guess what I'm saying is I don't know that you have to use a first-round pick to get one.
You don't have to.
You know?
I'm not even saying a first-round pick because we have gotten some gems. One of my very favorite players of all time is a very late-round pick in Amon Bradshaw. Nobody gave heart like
he was
that
a seven.
Guy gave heart.
Yeah, he
Such
was a seven.
Such a shame that his feet were so bad, you know? And, yes, we have gotten some really good late-round picks, but I think we have to stop and groom some people for the tight end position, keep them around, and give them a chance. And that's one of the things that I really like about Ben McAdoo. I was a huge Tom Coughlin fan. We'll always be indebted to that guy for our Super Bowl wins. But he had trouble playing younger players. And I think with McAdoo and his propensity to play younger players and give them a chance, we can groom a good tight end. We can groom a Bavaro. We can groom a Moa. We can groom somebody like that. Because, you know, if I see Danelle catch the ball and fall down one more time, I think I'm going to scream.
Oh, boy.
You know?
You had to go there. You know what? I appreciate your thoughts.
Go ahead, John. Yeah, Dana, we got to run. Thanks a lot for the call, okay?
I would say great call.
Great call.
I hope you call again. All right. Really enjoyed the phone call. Yes, I do think that we all agree the Giants need to upgrade the tight end position.
Right.
Now, I really would like you to get a good eye full of Will Johnson in 2017 because I think, John, he is going to be a big-time important part to this offense next year.
Correct.
I really do. I really believe that. So,
but again, that's more of a blocker than as a receiver.
He is. He is. But that, to me, between Jarrell Adams, Will Johnson, and whoever the rest of the tight end room turns out to be, I think that combination is going to be significantly improved from this year. I really do.
Not in the passing game, though.
Could be.
Depends who it is. And look, it's just like any other position, use a higher pick on that player, you're going to get a more talented player. If he's a lower pick, you're going to get a less talented player. That's just how it works.
Deep in the draft, though, this year.
It is a very good tight end draft.
It is a good tight end
draft. That is true. You can get a much better tight end in the second round this year than you could the last couple years.
No question.
Absolutely. No debate for me about that.
That's been pretty much documented so far.
Oh, good times.
Yeah, we were all over the place today.
It was a good show.
A lot of fun.
Enjoy the Super Bowl on Sunday, my friend.
You too.
Everybody, enjoy the big game. We'll see you on Monday with Tino and Meadow on Giants.com. We'll see you then.